From space, sunlight starts to illuminate the darkened Earth. A multitude of shafts of bright light shoot up from the surface of the globe and pulsate as it spins in space. Land and blue sea become visible. In white lettering, the name Universal encircles the center of the spinning globe. The screen fades to black. A droplet of water falls, creating ripples in the darkness. Imagine Entertainment. Typed white letters on a black background dart around, flickering and changing. Eventually they form the words, Universal Pictures and Imagine Entertainment present. The letters change, a Brian Grazer production. A Harold Becker film. Bruce Willis. Alec Baldwin. Mercury Rising. The white letters fill the screen, constantly changing. Miko Hughes, Chi McBride, Kim Dickens, Robert Stanton, Bodhi Pine Elfman. L.L. Ginter, Carrie Preston, John Carroll Lynch, Peter Stormare. Casting by Nancy Klopper. Music composed and conducted by John Barry. Costumes designed by Betsy Hyman. Co-producers Maureen Peyrot, Paul Neeson. Edited by Peter Honus, ACE. A helicopter flies low over green countryside. Production designer Patrizia von Brandenstein. Director of Photography Michael Sarasin. Executive producers Joseph M. Singer, Rick Kidney. Produced by Brian Grazer, Karen Curler. Based on the novel Simple Simon by Ryan Douglas Pearson. Screenplay by Lawrence Connor and Mark Rosenthal. Directed by Harold Becker. The helicopter now flies over suburban streets. Cars drive below. Underneath the chopper, the road is wider, flanked by stores and parked cars. People are running to join a crowd, watching something happening, which is cordoned off by police. The chopper veers off and upward. From inside, FBI agent Hartley peers down at the scene. From a bank, three frightened people run out onto a deserted street.
Let's go down!
The helicopter lands in the road in front of ambulances. Ambulance workers lift the three people onto stretchers. A man in an FBI jacket opens the helicopter door.
He got some out! How many left?
Three out! Eight left!
Edgar's still the man!
Edgar's the man!
Okay, Edgar, I want to thank you for letting these people go. Send out the others, and we can come to a peaceful resolution here.
Get this straight. I don't trust you or any agent of your occupation government. Now, you listen to me one more time. I have an order from the Citizens Court of South Dakota to seize the ill-gotten assets of this bank. You move your people away from here!
These bloodsuckers will burn in hell!
Camouflage-clad bank robbers hold hostages in a bank. Police surround them.
Well, they're getting ready to come in.
Let them come.
I have to go home.
Get down!
Please, let me go home. Please, let me go home.
Get the fuck down!
I just need to go home!
One of the robbers, Peter, an unshaven, rugged man in his 30s, has beaten one of the hostages to the floor. Another robber lowers his assault rifle, frustrated. Peter sticks his handgun back in his waistband and, shaking his head, approaches bearded, burly Edgar. He's sweating.
Sure don't feel good. You said we were going to be in and out of here before anybody knew what hit him. You said they were going to back down.
Peter glares at Edgar accusingly. Edgar's unmoved.
Ain't backing down, Edgar. You got an army out there. They're gonna come in here and shoot all of us.
God just wants his miracle to be greater.
God doesn't want your boys to get killed, Edgar.
Two nervous teenage boys in camouflage look back at Edgar. The hostages cower, huddled in a group. Ever more agitated, Peter grabs the phone.
We need more time, you sons of bitches!
We need George here, so shut up!
They cut us off.
We gotta go in.
We have a man in there. He wants more time.
Right. Undercover agent who isn't supposed to be there in the first place.
FBI agent Hartley decides.
We're going in. Let me try him on the bullhorn. If they come back to me...
You got 3 minutes.
Peter unwraps a chocolate bar and gives half to one teenager.
Blackwell, Edgar. I need you to pick up the telephone. I need to talk with you.
You can still walk out of here, you know. You just gotta stand up to him.
The boy considers this, glancing nervously.
Just tell him you want to go home. Can you do it?
The boy gulps and makes a decision. Holding his rifle in one hand, he saunters forward and stands in front of Edgar.
Edgar, please pick up the phone. We were doing well before.
Sir, Peter's right. It's not like you said it was going to be. I want to go home.
Edgar smacks him. Clutching his face, the boy picks himself up from the floor and gazes reproachfully at Edgar. Now Peter steps forward.
Edgar. The boy's right.
Traitor.
Danny.
Shut up, Isaac.
Just let me call him on the telephone.
We don't need him, Edgar.
We can still walk out of here, Edgar.
Do it, Edgar. For your boys, do it!
Edgar thinks about it, then lowers his rifle. As Peter lunges for the phone, explosions rip into the bank. Isaac opens up.
FBI, get out of the ground! Go! Danny! Get out! Go! God damn it!
I'm FBI! FBI! Get off me, asshole! Tell your men to hold their fire!
James, keep your head down!
Where are you?
Peter!
No!
No! No! No!
James is gunned down.
Damn it!
Get a med tech in here! Get a med tech in here, goddammit!
Don't talk.
Come on now, goddammit! Get a medtech in here!
Peter clasps his friend's chest. An FBI agent takes a pulse.
He's dead.
Peter slumps in grief, his mouth hanging open. He looks up at the mustachioed agent.
Who said go?
The agent looks away.
Who's the SAC?
Hartley.
Peter strides angrily along the street outside the bank.
Hartley!
Police officers stand around.
Special Agent Hartley! Hartley! Do you hear me ask for more time in there?
Get your hands off me.
Did you? Do you hear me ask for more time?
You're out of line, Jeffries.
Oh, I'm out of line? I'm out of line? Did I just massacre 5 fucking people? Huh? Did I? 3 seconds, Hartley. 3 seconds, I was gonna walk them all out alive!
Peter is called Art Jeffries. Jeffries puts down his gun. Hartley picks himself up, glowering.
I report to Washington just like you do, Jeffries.
Oh! Art punches him hard. Hartley's lip is bleeding. Art spits on the ground in disgust. The screen fades to black. A plump middle-aged woman in a suit enters a stone building. A sign reads, The Chicago Neuropsychiatric Learning Center. Inside, she walks through a door marked Observation and looks into a classroom full of children with mothers beside them. One boy, of about 10 years old, stares closely at a map on the wall. A teacher coaxes another boy up. The woman enters the classroom holding onto a puzzle magazine. The boy is reading place names off the map.
Restroom, left on Belmont.
Hey, Simon, I have a surprise for you.
next on Fullerton.
You're given some pretty good directions there. Look, I have something very, very special. You like these puzzles, don't you? Okay, but not yet, Simon. If I give you the puzzle book, I want you to join in with the rest of the class, okay?
Simon snatches the magazine and retreats to a wall where bags hang from coat hooks. He stuffs the magazine into his rucksack. The woman bends over, smiling.
That's great. It's time to join the group now, okay?
Simon sits down next to the other students and starts rocking on his chair. The teacher leans forward.
Good morning, Simon. Look at me.
She points to her eyes. He looks.
Good morning, teacher.
A clear and bright day. People stream across a wide plaza in between high-rise blocks. Art Jeffries, now shaven and dressed smartly in a suit, takes off his sunglasses as he enters one of the buildings. His hair is cropped short. As he stands leaning on a desk in a busy office, men in jackets emblazoned with FBI walk past him. Agent Jordan, a large black guy in a suit, comes up.
How are you? Well, another day at the office. You ready?
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about it.
Agent Jordan leads the way.
Agent Jeffries here to see you, Chief.
Art walks into the office and sits down. The chief is behind a desk reading documents in a thick blue file. Agent Jordan sits down too.
The psychologist wrote delusional paranoia in capital letters across the bottom of your file.
So am I fired?
No. You're not fired. But I can't put you undercover anymore. That's over.
What do they expect me to do?
They expect you to do your job.
I work undercover. That's my job.
Well, you have a new job now.
And what is that?
Sitting on a wire. Stakeouts. Log tapes. Maybe a little public
14 relations. 14 years on the job and that's all it means? I gotta go sit on a wire with some rookie listening to a housewife?
All you had to do was keep your mouth shut.
All you had to do was act like
you belong on the same team as
what
the rest
team?
Of us.
That bunch of suits sitting behind a desk trying to justify their existence?
Like me, is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know, Joe. Why didn't you say one thing to back me up?
Because you were wrong.
Oh, I wasn't wrong. God.
You were dead.
Two teenage kids in cold blood.
Teenage kids that were goddamn bank robbers, for Christ's sake.
They were kids.
Hey! Will you forget about South Dakota? Forget about who's right and who's wrong. This is one of the best undercover guys we've ever had.
Art is standing up. The chief sits down.
How could I forget that?
Art is still upset. The chief looks more conciliatory.
Sit down, Art.
Slowly and sulkily, Art returns to his chair, his gun sticking out of his trouser belt.
Sometimes you got something. It's magic. Then it goes away. You had it, but the magic's gone.
Art weighs up the chief's words.
They told you to break my balls and see if you could get me to quit. Not gonna make it easy for you. You want me to sit on a wire, I'll do it. You want me to chase file applicants, I'll do that. Take your best shot.
Check your mailbox for your new assignments.
Art glares at the chief. Children playing baseball on a street scoot off to make way for a yellow school bus with red lights flashing. It pulls up outside a house. On the bus, Simon leafs through plastic-covered study cards, labelled pictures of his mommy and daddy.
Hey, Simon. We're here.
Another study card, a drawing of a house, number 2144, Simon is home. Simon alights and walks slightly clumsily up to the front door of his home. His mother smiles at him from inside as he reaches up to press the bell. Simon has a mop of brown hair. His mother points two fingers right into her eyes.
Mommy, Simon is home.
Look at me.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, honey. I missed you. Come on inside.
His mother is young and pretty. Concentrating on stepping over the lintel, Simon moves forward with measured but ungainly steps. His mother gazes out at the children playing in the street. Simon takes a sachet from a jar his mother offers him. He carefully tears it open and tips the powder into a mug. she adds boiling water and he methodically stirs the beverage, concentrating intently on the task. She watches, smiling encouragingly.
Be careful.
It's very hot. Sip it slowly.
Daddy will be home soon. When you finish that, you can wait for him up in your room.
Up in his spacious room, Simon takes off his red rucksack and switches on a light. He opens the puzzle magazine, World of Puzzles, to find crosswords, pictorial mazes and number puzzles. He reaches for a large red marker pen and yanks the cap off. Concentrating hard, Simon stands hunched over his book and unerringly drags the marker through a complicated circular maze, puzzle number 102. When he reaches the center, he scribes a solid red dot. Satisfied, he replaces the cap on his marker pen. Simon flicks back some pages and finds puzzle number 99, a grid of numbers, letters and symbols with no explanation. He stares at the page, mesmerized. His eyes are unblinking. A line of characters, L2106, and the sign for equal or less than, 190. Simon's eyes focus on the sign for equal or less than. Later, he treads carefully down carpeted stairs to a telephone on a side table. He lifts the bulky receiver and dials a number, 1800. In an office, a monitor flashes up. Incoming call.
Congratulations. You've reached the puzzle center. For solving one of our master puzzles, you've won a 2-year subscription to the magazine of your choice. Can I please have your name, address, and telephone number?
You are a stranger.
Excuse me. This is the puzzle center. Where did you get this number?
Puzzle 99.
What did you just say? What did you just say? Who is this?
Simon? Put down the phone, honey.
Simon, wait a second, please don't...
The bearded man is frustrated. He lunges for a telephone and beats in a number, then looks through a window down into another busy office.
Come on.
A lanky man looks up. He has been paged by Leo, the bearded man.
If they don't, you may have lost some bytes to transfer, you might have lost a keyword, you won't be able to defractionate.
What?
Yeah?
Are you scrambled?
Give me a break, Leo, I'm busy.
It's Mercury, Dean. Somebody just walked on water. You have to get up here now.
The lanky man, Dean, bounds up a metal staircase. Leo replays a tape for him.
What did you just say?
You are a stranger.
Who is this?
Simon? Put down the phone, honey.
Simon, wait a second. Please don't... Who is that?
Dean's thinking hard.
Listen to the timbre of his voice. It's a child. That had to be his mother.
Right. It's just some rugrat drooling over the phone, punching numbers. Like a random thing, huh?
We're not that lucky.
Lost in thought, Dean drops into a chair.
We have to call Kudrow.
What? Dean, what? No. We don't have to call anybody. Man, all we gotta do is just do an analysis and give him a report when he gets back. That's it.
Leo, do you understand what just happened here? We have to call him. We have to call him now, or he's going to say we tried to hide it.
In the American Embassy, Bangkok, Thailand, a uniformed soldier marches briskly along a polished corridor and is met by a white-capped guard outside a closed door.
Morning, sir.
Good morning, Marine. I've got an urgent message for Lieutenant Colonel Kudrow.
Mercury is already operational in most of our comm centers, and I'm here to confirm everything you've already heard. Mercury is a quantum leap in our communication security. And once we complete its installation in all of our comm centers, it's going to be very hard for our adversaries.
And our allies.
And our allies to compromise our communications.
An urgent message for you, sir.
Seated at the head of a table, smartly dressed Kudrow quickly reads the message and, perturbed, rises to his feet.
Excuse me, Mr. Johnson. We'll continue the briefing.
All right, gentlemen.
Kudrow leaves the meeting. Later, he places his thumb on a screen and types at a keyboard next to flashing high-tech equipment. A line of varied characters are replaced by the message, "Mercury is falling." Kudrow stares at this in disbelief. He considers a response and types in a reply, "Will arrive in 12 hours." The screen reads, "Encoding," and a long line of varied characters is created. Evening, a work van pulls up outside Simon's family home. A balding man in a dark grey working shirt and trousers gets out, clipboard in hand, and jogs up to the front door. Inside the house, he dumps the clipboard and joins Simon's mother in the kitchen. He bends down to smell a pan on the stove.
You're late.
I wasn't when I started. Traffic was like mud. I oozed home.
I told Simon he could wait up for you.
Simon, my man.
Simon's father lets go of his wife and leaves the kitchen, bounding energetically upstairs.
I wonder where Simon is.
Simon, now dressed in a loose white T-shirt, is standing with his back to his father. His father sits down.
Time for bed, Simon.
Simon closes his puzzle book and walks over to his father. His T-shirt features the Rugrats and a happy, happy slogan. His father picks him up and rests him on his thigh. Then he embraces Simon, who sits stiffly at first before relaxing. Simon's father rocks his son back and forth in the chair, smiling happily. Simon nuzzles his head into his father's neck and closes his eyes. His father kisses him tenderly on the forehead. He picks the boy up and lays him down on his bed. Simon, weary, cuddles into his pillow and his father covers him with bedding before turning out the light and leaving the boy fast asleep. Nighttime. A saloon car speeds along a wet, deserted road and pulls up at a brightly lit checkpoint. Kudrow flashes his ID and the soldier nods to him. The teethed barrier lowers. Kudrow drives up to a massive installation bedecked with satellite discs and drives down a lit ramp into its bowels. Inside, in an elevated office, he drops his briefcase on a desk and hits an intercom button.
Send in Podransky and Pandle, please.
Yes, sir.
He looks down through a window onto a huge open-plan office floor, busy with staff working at computer terminals. A short-haired woman walks briskly along a corridor and presses a panel on a door.
Who needs a fix? Double tall, double dark, double sweet, double everything. I'm so glad I missed the whole drug thing. So my body was virgin territory for caffeine. It makes me feel so Ricky Lake, like I could talk to anybody. What can I say? I'm the Java Queen. What's wrong?
Kudrow wants to see me.
Cool. Maybe you'll get your own section.
No, I screwed up.
Well, just go in there and throw him a Bart Simpson.
Kudrow, dude, chill out. It was that way when I got there.
Don't.
Kudrow turns round from observing the office. He's holding World of Puzzles in his hands.
Puzzle line. Puzzle line. Now, I've traveled 10,000 miles in the past 24 hours, so I've had a lot of time to reflect on this. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that neither one of you has ever said the words puzzle line to me.
Leo and Dean look at each other guiltily.
Sir, before Mercury went operational, we ran a standard validation protocol. The works. Double sets of paired Cray supercomputers. Freaking Velociraptor machines. Chewing at Mercury 24 hours a day. Mercury came out unbent. Awesome, sir. It was finally a code that couldn't be broken. But there was one last thing to check out. The, geek factor.
Human beings will fool you sometimes, so we thought it was important to...
So we slipped a message in the back of a puzzle magazine right in the middle of one of those egghead word games. We basically dared the amateurs to take a crack.
We were sure that no one would ever call.
But somebody did, sir.
Kudrow reads documents from a file.
His name is Simon Lynch. He lives in Chicago. He is 9 years old, and he has deciphered a message written in the most sophisticated code the world has ever known. In a geek's
puzzle magazine. And I don't recall ever authorizing anyone to put any message into any magazine.
That couldn't just happen. A kid couldn't just pop it open.
Not only is he 9 years old, he is handicapped. He is autistic.
Yes, that explains it.
So our $2 billion code is an open book to people of diminished capacity?
No, sir. Autism isn't synonymous with diminished capacity. Autistic people are, they're shut off. But it's not unusual for an autistic person to be a savant.
Oh, a savant?
Yeah, look, he may not be able to actually decipher the code. It might just appear to
him. Right. He didn't calculate anything. He just saw it. You know, like those stupid pictures that you see at the mall. You know, you stare at him, and then whack, all of a sudden you're looking at the Statue of Liberty.
Exactly.
This is not a stupid picture at the mall. This is national security.
Kudrow stands up.
Looking at the best case scenario, let's suppose the boy is unique and he doesn't understand what he's just done. Does that solve my problem? Answer, no. Analysis, all we need now is for someone else who understands his capability to come along, and my problems are increased exponentially.
Then maybe we should talk to the kid. And,
No.
Kudrow shakes his head firmly.
There must be nothing that connects the boy to this office. Nothing. Am I clear?
Yes, sir.
I want you to erase the tape. Am I clear?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Lynch comes downstairs at home.
Honey, will you get that?
Yeah, I got it.
Martin Lynch.
Yeah? Detective Varell, Chicago Police. Sorry to bother you. Can I ask you a few questions? It's very important. I got your address from Simon's school.
Something wrong?
Well, if I drag this thing out, it's only going to make things worse. I'm afraid one of the other parents has made accusations against Simon's driver of a sexual nature.
Oh, my God.
Well, they're only allegations at this point. If I could step inside and speak with you?
Sure.
Won't take more than a moment.
The smartly dressed man enters their house.
I don't want to upset you.
Well, you've already upset us.
I'm sorry about that.
Would you like a cup of coffee or something?
Yeah, that'd be real nice.
The man flashes her a smile, then shoots her in the back. He shoots Mr. Lynch in the forehead and he falls to the ground. In his bedroom, Simon is playing Connect Four by himself. The hitman dons a black leather glove and walks upstairs. Simon is rocking backwards and forwards. Suddenly, the hitman stops in his tracks.
911.
The hitman goes back downstairs.
911.
Now dead, Simon's dad lies by the phone, covered in blood. The hitman replaces the telephone receiver and races back upstairs. He surveys Simon's bedroom. No Simon. The hitman yanks the mattress up off the bed. There's nothing underneath it. Increasingly frustrated, the hitman scours the room. He lunges into a cupboard, still brandishing his gun. Alerted, he trots downstairs, removing his gun silencer. Then, taking a handkerchief, he wipes the gun handle and presses the weapon into Mr. Lynch's lifeless hand. He then takes aim at a wall. Having firmly positioned the gun in his victim's grip, the hitman takes off his glove and rushes through the kitchen and out of the back door. The body of Mrs. Lynch lies on the kitchen floor. At the rear of the house, a getaway car speeds up to collect the hitman and then roars off. Elsewhere, a young man runs down into a basement carrying takeaway food in brown packets.
Anything while I was gone, Art?
Yeah, I think we got a big break in this case.
What?
The Attorney General himself just called in 25 dimes on the cups.
What do you think?
The man smiles uncomfortably. The man eagerly takes notes next to a tape machine.
Dumb bet, 13. Cubs are in a slump.
Would you mind if I told something personal?
Art looks up from his paper.
Yeah.
It would, Roger. It really would.
Excuse me. Yeah. Art.
Art wearily takes the phone from him.
Yeah.
Sending someone to spell you. I've got another assignment for you.
Lomax's got another matter of national security for me.
He wants you to check into a possible missing child, 2-1 precinct. Chicago PD retains jurisdiction.
A crowd is gathered outside the Lynch's home. Ambulance men wheel an empty stretcher as a car with a flashing red light pulls up. Chewing gum and looking tough, Art gets out. He's dressed casually in white t-shirt, jeans and a checked shirt, untucked. He dumps the gum. Art flashes his ID wallet at uniformed officers, one of whom opens the front door for him. Art goes into the Lynch's home to find the murder scene being photographed.
Yeah, lacerations.
Nichols, you still alive?
Still here, all right?
How are you?
Nichols wears jacket and tie.
All right. What is this? It's supposed to be a missing kid.
It is. These are the parents. It's like a murder-suicide.
So where's the kid?
Missing, remember?
What are you doing here? Well, somebody called the FBI and he sent me. No figure.
I don't know, I meant, what are you doing here?
Working my way to the bottom, Jack. Just like you.
The kid's name is Simon. Neighbors say he's retarded.
Guys who killed her families kill all of them.
Maybe he did the kid somewhere else. Didn't want Mom to see. A kid like that costs a bundle.
Maybe Dad just got tired of knocking himself out for a kid who didn't know any better. Put them all out of their misery. How's a guy that's so broke afford a $1,500 handgun?
Art glances at Nichols.
Mind if I take a look around, Jack?
We already did. The kid's not here.
Does that mean you mind?
Hey, be my guest. By the way, Lomax called. He said it's important.
Yeah, I bet. Got a phone on you?
Nicole searches his pockets.
Well, you know.
Thanks.
Make sure I get it back.
Art reaches the upstairs landing. A uniformed officer returns downstairs as Art ventures into Simon's bedroom, scrutinizing everything carefully. The bed mattress is still stacked up at an angle and the cupboard door is ajar. He picks up Simon's discarded rucksack from the floor. Art drops the rucksack on Simon's desk and peers out of the window. Taking Jack's phone, he absentmindedly dials a number while looking in the cupboard. Art hears something. He looks around. Art looks in the cupboard. Pulls off a wooden panel. Simon is huddled inside in the dark.
How you doing, champ? You okay in there?
Simon's traumatized.
Come on. You can come on out now. Nobody's gonna hurt you.
Simon slaps Art's hand away.
I'm not gonna hurt you. Okay?
Simon's eyes stare upwards vacantly.
Come on. Come on.
Art drags Simon out. Simon starts playing Connect Four again. Nichols sprints upstairs.
Call Concordia. Get an ambulance over here. Have some badges waiting for us when we get there.
For what?
I want this kid protected.
How am I going to justify the overtime?
Since when you worry about overtime, Jack? The coroner says murder-suicide. They can go. Anybody asks about the overtime, put it on Lomax's gold card.
Inside a speeding ambulance, Simon thrashes on a stretcher, restrained by straps. Art sits beside him with an ambulance man.
You're just making him worse.
The poor's own safety.
Come on, unstrap.
For his own safety.
All right, Simon, we're gonna unstrap you. Take it easy. Simon, just calm down, all right?
For me.
Tell him to turn that off.
Turn the siren off!
Art flips through Simon's study cards.
Hey, look, who is this? Is that your mommy right there? Is that your mommy?
Mommy.
Right there?
Mommy.
Yes, that's right, your mommy. That's her. Is that your daddy?
Daddy.
Right. Do not touch, it may be hot. That's very good advice. Is that your teacher, Dr. London? She's your friend, right? Well, my name is Art. I'm your friend, too.
Strapped in a hospital bed. Simon has an injection and quietens. The nurse comes out to Art, who's been observing.
Hi. Are you the doctor?
No, I'm the nurse.
Is the doctor going to see this boy?
I took care of him.
Is that the best you can do for him? Just give him a shot?
He's autistic.
Autistic?
Uh-huh.
Well, what does that mean? Nothing gets through?
No, it's just the opposite. Everything gets through. He has trouble with feelings and emotions, so he gets very frightened and confused.
Wait. I'm not going to be able to question this boy?
Probably not. Sorry.
The nurse leaves Art standing thoughtfully in the corridor outside Simon's private room. Art observes the comatose boy through the window and departs. A police officer sits nearby reading a newspaper. The officer resumes reading. Nighttime. Leo and Dean are driving through rain-lashed streets.
Why are we doing this, Dean? Why does he want to see us way out there? We didn't do anything wrong, right?
Shall they turn around?
No, he'd kill us.
Well, he might kill us anyway.
What do you mean, sir?
Relax, Leo, please.
It's pitch black. Their car pulls up to a barrier, their headlights illuminating a sign, Rock Creek Park, open May to October. Dean kills the headlights.
Okay, I'm scared. I'm getting really, really scared.
Leo, stop it. We're doing this together. We didn't break any laws. No matter what he says or does, we're going to do the right thing. So just relax.
Jesus! Okay, can we go home now, please?
All right.
A man whistles to an Alsatian.
It's him.
Kudrow beckons them towards a shack.
Let's just get this over with.
Okay.
The rain is pouring down around them. The Alsatian disappears as Leo and Dean trot over mud to join Kudrow under a porch. They eye him warily. Kudrow flicks open a newspaper, the Chicago Sun-Times. The headline reads, Family Murder Suicide. Boy Survives Parent's Death.
This changes everything. Now somebody else knows.
Oh, God.
What happened to the boy?
He's alive. He's being held in a lockdown unit in a Chicago hospital.
Why don't we tell somebody?
Because we are somebody, Leo. We're the ones that are ultimately responsible for this. There isn't anybody to tell. So I want you to keep the puzzle line open 24 hours a day, and I want you two to do your goddamn fucking job! Quiet!
Kudrow now flashes them a smile.
Maybe I'm going about this the wrong way. You know, my wife says that my people skills are like my cooking skills, quick and tasteless. But in the end, it's about saving lives, isn't that the point? Yes?
Yes.
I know a man named Rashid Halabi, born in Paramus, New Jersey. Valedictorian of his high school class, worked his way through MIT right now. He's a colonel in Saddam's Republican Guard.
We put him there. It's him this code is protecting. There are thousands of other men and women just like him whose identities are protected by this code. We can save their lives. I give you my pledge. I want you to give me yours. Diligence, loyalty, and above all, absolute silence.
Art is watching TV at home.
Hey, folks, here
Well, that's kind of an interesting story. You know, the television program 60 Minutes right here on CBS Sunday night. So it's only Sunday, right? Sunday night, 60 Minutes. Morley Safer.
He experiences black and white flashbacks to the failed bank robbery in Dakota. Art's hands are pressed on the chest of James, his bleeding teenage accomplice, whose head lolls as he dies.
I changed tires doing 86, you know what I'm saying?
Art takes a couple of pills. Nighttime, Art heads out onto the street. A powerful-looking woman struts the stage inside a murky bar. Art drinks spirits at the bar as he flips through Simon's multicolored laminated study cards. A picture of his mother, Mommy. A picture of his smiling father, Daddy. A picture of a toothbrush. Brush teeth before bed. A picture of a cooker. Do not touch, it may be hot. Art drains his glass and takes his leave. Back in the hospital, Art steps out of an elevator. Art surveys the corridors and the nurse's station. The place is deserted. Glass swing doors lead to the surgery. Art, slightly concerned, leans on the reception desk and looks about him. He looks through to Simon's room.
Where is everyone? Where are the police? Where's the guard that was sitting right here?
They were called off half an hour ago and told they weren't needed.
I want you to take me to see Simon Lynch right now. Unlock that door.
We just transferred him to pediatrics.
Where is that?
Room 1106. Up those stairs, one flight.
Who authorized the transfer?
His parents. I can understand them. They didn't want their little kid on.
Art is already racing towards the door to the stairwell. He dashes up the stairs and into pediatrics, drawing his handgun. Putting his gun back in the pocket of his brown suede bomber jacket, Art steps carefully into a darkened ward. Children lie sleeping. The end bed is lit up, but there's no one in it. Simon's rucksack sits on the bedside table. Art picks it up. A man appears behind him. Art drops the rucksack.
Can I help you?
Art grips his gun in his pocket.
Hi, I'm with the FBI. Looking for Simon Lynch. You know where he is?
Oh, he suffered a minor head injury, nothing serious. We had to take him down to X-ray.
Where is the X-ray?
Radiology, 7th floor.
It's the man who killed Simon's parents.
No problem.
Art hurtles downstairs. Meanwhile, the hitman rips curtains aside looking for Simon. He spots a hospital worker through a door and ducks back out of sight. He then draws a large handgun equipped with a silencer. He sticks the gun back in his belt and moves on. Art bursts into the radiology department. It's shrouded in darkness. No one's there. Art grimaces in frustration. The hitman desperately checks other rooms. An old white-haired man lies in bed, breathing through a respirator. A TV screen above his head shows only coloured lines. Art is now ascending the stairs. Art reaches the pediatrics department floor again and, gun drawn, starts checking all the rooms. No sign of Simon. He runs through more doors. Art spots something reflected in a window, Simon in his pajamas. He finds Simon lying on the floor behind the old man's bed and grabs him. Art runs on with Simon thrashing under his arm. He drops Simon and presses an elevator button. Simon stabs the same button.
A little crowded, huh?
Yeah. They join two nurses and a patient on a trolley bed. The hitman gets in.
Just made it, Doctor. You must be new.
Welcome to Concordia.
Thank you. You're very kind.
Art and the hitman stare at each other. Art feels for his gun as Simon counts down the floors.
7, 6, 5, 4.
Bernard presses the door button and backs out with Simon.
2, 1.
Thanks for the ride. Good night. Wait!
The hitman chases Art and Simon round a corner and Art shoots at him. Art runs through the hospital with Simon struggling under his arm. The hitman chases them. Outside, Art throws Simon into an ambulance. The hitman watches the ambulance speed off. On the freeway, Art drives fast, the ambulance tailgating another car. Simon plays with the switches on the instrument panel.
All right, leave it off. Leave it off. Come on, son. I don't need any more attention right now. Just leave me alone, all right? Okay. Hey, leave the buttons alone, goddammit! Please.
Simon responds to Art's pleading outstretched hand, and Art turns his attention back to the road.
A small step for mankind.
A car drives up alongside the ambulance. The hitman takes aim. Art ducks. Art brakes violently and the vehicle swerves all over the road, bouncing off another car. Art struggles to keep control. The ambulance scrapes to a stop against the side wall. Art grabs Simon. Art gets him over a fence. They lie face down. Art, gritting his teeth, aims his gun through mesh fencing towards the freeway. Simon walks down a train track towards an oncoming train. Art runs towards him. The train driver shouts, "Get out of my way!" Simon's oblivious. Art hurls himself at Simon, pulling him out of the train's path as it clatters past at speed. Another express passes in the opposite direction. Sparks fly from the wheels of the two trains as Art and Simon lie huddled between them. One train grinds to a halt. Art and Simon struggle up. They stagger towards the back of the train. A guard shines a torch on them and Art waves. Later they sit on the train, Simon scrutinizing the train network map. The train stops at a platform busy with travelers. A lean, mean-looking man with receding black hair watches it come to a stop. The lean man steps onto the train and looks backwards and forwards along the platform before the door closes. The train moves on. Art reads Simon's study cards.
Friends, Mr. Pasquale, Westerman.
Pasquale!
Pasquale? That's his name, Mr. Pasquale? Do not talk to strangers. Is that why you won't talk to me? You think I'm a stranger?
The lean man stalks through the length of the train, checking out the passengers. Art takes out a pen and writes on the back of one of Simon's study cards. Art is a friend.
Art. It's me. I'm your friend. See? Art is your friend.
No!
Okay, Simon, okay. All right.
The lean man is still searching. Art looks suspiciously down the aisle of the carriage. The lean man gets ever closer. The lean man enters their carriage. Art and Simon are nowhere to be seen. He strides to the end past other passengers and the map that Simon was examining and tries the handle on the closed toilet door. It won't budge. Looking through the end door, he spies Simon in the next carriage. He pulls a gun from inside his newspaper and moves through the door. Art is waiting for him between the carriages and punches the lean man over. Art kicks him brutally in the face and on his hands as the man hangs desperately onto chains. Somehow the man gets back up. The man punches Art but then swings, misses and is thrown off. Art pulls himself back up out of the way of an oncoming train. He spits out blood and steps into Simon's carriage. Simon sits calmly inside. Art grimaces in pain and wipes blood off his battered face. Later, Art and Simon get out of a taxi. Simon rings a doorbell. Art stops him. Agent Jordan opens the door.
Sorry, Ty. Come on, Simon.
What the hell happened to you?
Still dressed in his pajamas, Simon walks in behind Art. He's fascinated by some toy cars and walks over to them.
You kidnapped this kid from the hospital. Are you crazy?
Kidnapped this kid? What are you talking about?
Lomax has been calling me every 15 minutes. There's a warrant out for your arrest.
I just killed a guy in a CTA.
Oh, Christ.
I had to. He's trying to kill us.
How did this happen?
Somebody pulled the cops off the kid at the hospital, Tom. It's not a murder-suicide. The mom and dad just got in the way. They're trying to get the kid. If he had to hit in that crawl space,
stop
it would have got him,
stop
too.
Stop it! I cannot handle this paranoid conspiracy crap.
Guess what? It is a conspiracy. Who pulled the cops off the kid? The dead Martin and Jenny Lynch call up and say, take my kid out of protective custody? Bullshit, Tom, this is real.
I don't give a fuck if it's real or not. If I don't call Lomax right now, I'm an accessory to this.
If you don't get on the phone right now and call Concordia or CTA, you're a dumb cop.
Agent Jordan, known as Tommy, picks up the phone.
Tell him to bring a body bag to put the pieces in.
Arthur.
I did. Sorry we woke you up.
Well, it's good to see you. It's been too long.
Art is bleeding.
Try not to bleed on my carpet.
Simon plays with the wheels of a toy car.
His name's Simon.
Dana, in her dressing gown, bends down to Simon.
Hello, Simon. I bet you're hungry. I have some peanut butter and jelly in the kitchen. Now, how's that sound?
He ignores her.
This is my son, TJ. TJ, this is Simon.
Hi.
Why don't we go in the kitchen?
Simon flinches when she touches him.
TJ, why don't we go in the kitchen and make something to eat, and maybe Simon will come with us?
Dana ushers young TJ kitchenwards as Simon, still spinning his toy car wheels, stares at Art. Art stares back. Simon puts the toy car back down and walks through towards the kitchen. His eyes blank, his steps awkward. Art and Tommy watch him go. Later, Dana throws shirtless Art his washed T-shirt.
Here you go, Art. It's still a little damp, but at least it's clean.
Thanks, Dana.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Well, Simon, I think these will fit you.
Hey, not my friend Tommy's shirt.
What have I told you about sharing?
I thought you were done taking those downers.
Art's been taking more pills.
So?
There's no body on the L-tracks.
What?
No body, no blood, no casing, nothing.
Who could have got it cleaned up that fast?
Give him up.
What?
The kid. Give him up. Take him back.
Would you give your own kid up?
It's not your kid!
Yeah. Well, right now he's nobody's kid. His mom and dad got shot dead by a real bad guy. Remember? Let's go, Simon.
All right, just let me get these clothes on him, all right?
I need your car keys.
Tommy hesitates.
Let him just walk around the streets with his kid now. Come on.
I'm reporting it stolen in the morning.
Thanks.
Art drives Simon through the dark and rain and pulls up under a bridge on a deserted road. He turns off the engine. Beside him, Simon is rocking gently. Art yawns.
How can you not be tired?
He's going to sing.
Daddy's not here right now, Simon.
Daddy's going to sing.
Look, I told you, your daddy is not here now. How am I supposed to explain this?
He's going to sing.
Aunt scoffs more pills.
I'm just gonna close my eyes for a minute, son.
Art nods off. Art's head nods as he falls deeper into sleep. He experiences flashbacks in black and white to the failed bank robbery in Dakota. James runs, then is gunned down. James's body slides down a wall to the ground. It's morning. Art wakes and looks to the passenger seat. Simon's disappeared. Art drives down a tree-lined street, passing under a large metal bridge. Art leans forward as he drives, peering out of the window, then reaches into his pocket. Art takes the tablets from his pocket and removes the lid. He scatters the tablets from the window and then chucks the bottle out. Art drives down the wide street, which is flanked on both sides by lines of parked cars. He sees Simon trudging awkwardly down the street. Art slows up.
Simon? Simon?
Art gets out of the car. Art walks towards Simon, who's passing a large ivy-covered house. Art trots across a grass verge as Simon ambles on. Then Art dashes ahead of Simon and crouches in front of him. Simon stops walking and looks up, avoiding Art's gaze.
Let's go for a ride.
Art stands and turns back, watching Simon as he does so. Wearing a red hooded jacket, Simon gazes blankly ahead, then turns, his study cards hanging from his belt. Later in Art's car.
Left on Kenwood. Left.
Okay. You're going left.
Howard Avenue. To J Street.
That's right.
J Street. To West 23rd Street.
You know where we're going?
Simon is going home.
Yeah. Simon is going home.
Art drives Simon slowly down the wide street. Art turns the car to his right, passing the parked van that Simon's father had driven. Art slows the car. Art bashes the door open.
Mommy, Simon is home.
Simon walks into the kitchen, oblivious to the bloodstain on the hall carpet. Simon picks up a mug. He carries the blue floral mug across the kitchen.
Mommy, Simon is home. Simon is home.
Art reaches for the round glass jar containing the drink sachets.
You want this?
Art hands Simon a sachet of drinking chocolate from the jar.
Very really hot. Sip it slowly.
Later in his bedroom, Simon switches on the white angle-poise lamp at a desk by the window. Art steps towards the desk. Art watches Simon open his puzzle book and turn the pages until he reaches puzzle number 99. Simon scrutinizes the information in his World of Puzzles magazine. Art sees Simon at the top of the stairs. Simon tramps down the stairs with a blank expression. Art follows him. There's a bloodstain on the floor by the phone. Simon kneels by the phone and lifts the receiver.
Get it, please.
Leo and Dean in their office.
Congratulations, you've reached the Puzzle Center. For solving one of our master puzzles, you've won a 2-year subscription to the magazine of your choice. Can I please have your name, address, and telephone number?
You are a stranger.
That's him. Dean. Dean, he's calling from his own house. You have to call Cujo right now. What are you doing? What are you doing?
Thank you, Simon.
Simon? Is that you?
Yeah, the phone.
Simon?
Who is this?
Answer me. Who is this? Hello? This is the FBI. We have this number and we will trace it.
Who is this?
No, you won't.
You can't trace it. Not this number.
Who is this? What agency do you work for? Answer me.
Do not tell him who we are.
Please don't tell him my name. I need some more time, all right? Don't call this number again. I'm going to set up an email address. Einstein. Check in the morning.
No, don't hang...
Dean has hung up. Frustrated, Art replaces the receiver. Art stalks to the window. A police car's outside. Art and Simon leave via the back door.
Dean, please don't do this.
You did it once, you can do it again.
And you think this FBI agent is smart enough to figure out what you're doing?
He better be, because that boy's life is at stake.
This is bad. It's not fair to me, because he'll assume I was in on it too.
I don't think they can hear you on the moon. Listen.
I don't want to listen to you. You're scaring me.
If anything happens to me, you're going to know who did it. I expect you to do what you're supposed to do.
Dean places his thumb on a screen.
No.
You will. I know it.
Mercury encryption mode enabled flashes up on the screen.
Try CIA.
Art is in a library.
No. Let's try FBI.
The middle-aged librarian types on the keyboard and does a search on the computer. An email address for Einstein appears on screen.
Good.
A prompt to enter a password.
Albert.
The word incorrect.
Try E equals MC squared. All caps.
The librarian types. Just like in the puzzle book, a complex grid of numbers, letters and symbols appears on the screen.
Give you some privacy.
Thanks.
Art scans the room for Simon, who's standing by a bookcase, then approaches the boy.
Hey, partner. I need your help with something. It's a puzzle. Can you help me with a puzzle?
Puzzle.
That's right. Puzzle. Right over here. Come on.
Art strides over to the computer, followed by Simon.
All right. I'm going to lift you up now, okay? Let's put you up on the chair.
Simon gazes intently at the screen.
Can you read that? Simon? What does it say?
Today. 12 o'clock. Big rebuilding.
Good boy.
I'm gonna start to take this personally if you don't. Hello?
Art trips over a woman's bag in a cafe.
Oh, I'm sorry, sorry. Are you okay?
I really am fine. I'm sorry. It was my fault. I should watch where I was going.
No, I shouldn't have it there. Just the way my day's going, I'm lucky you didn't trip and sue me.
What do you got in here? Plumbing supplies? Look, this is going to sound crazy, but I have a little problem, and I was wondering if you could help me out. You see that little boy sitting over there? Do you think you could just watch him just for a couple minutes?
You didn't just accidentally trip over the case, did you?
He's autistic, and I'm his big brother. Not his real big brother, you know, Big Brothers of America. It's going really well, but I need to go get a prescription filled for him, and normally I'd take him with me, but I don't like to disturb him when he's sitting so calmly like that. You don't have to do anything. Just sit here and be your lovely self. Please.
Okay, yeah. What's his name?
Simon. I'm sure this is okay.
Yeah. If I can handle a district manager, I can handle anyone.
Thank you. I will be right back. What's your name?
Stacy.
Stacy.
Sebring.
Stacy. Thank you so much. I'll be right back, I promise.
Stacy rolls her eyes as Art nips out of the cafe.
Would have done it without the flattery.
Cropped redhead Stacy picks up her bag from the floor. Smiling, she glides over to Simon's table.
Hey, Simon.
People dance in the busy street near the steel drum players. Dean stands nearby in a grey jacket and a black E equals MC squared t-shirt. Art walks up to Dean.
Just keep walking. Keep walking.
Jeffries?
Just keep walking.
I wasn't sure you'd be here. Simon's read the code twice now. It's really incredible. It's also very dangerous.
Who do you work for? CIA?
No.
Who, the Defense Department?
I'm afraid you're not that lucky. I think the FBI likes to call us no such agency.
Why does the NSA want a 9-year-old autistic boy?
Because the human brain is still a mystery.
What?
Look, the Reagan administration mandated the National Security Agency to generate a new code to protect American informants working for foreign governments. So we developed a super code at huge expense, named it Mercury. We thought it was impenetrable.
You're telling me a 9-year-old kid cracked the government's super code?
Look, it doesn't matter. He can read it. He might even be able to recreate it. That's why his life is in danger.
The NSA is willing to have this boy killed to protect the code?
We have already tried. I think my division chief may have given orders. Look, I'm just a cryptographer, a nerd. I don't know what these people do. Maybe it's routine killing kids. Maybe my boss is an aberration.
Dean falls to the ground with a bullet hole in his back. The hitman sees Art, then dashes away. Art chases after him.
All in, let's get in!
Fight!
The hitman scurries behind a pillar and aims his gun at Art. Art moves back out of range as the crowd sinks to the ground. He aims his gun. A group of bustling tourists descend a flight of stairs. They walk down the path between Art and the hitman. The tourists move out of his way as Art runs ahead. Art rushes to where the hitman was hiding, then dashes forward, aiming his gun. Art searches for the man. Art looks ahead to a tree in the empty pathway by the side of some water. The Chicago police cordon off the area around Dean's slumped body. Art watches as two ambulance men unroll a white sheet, then cover Dean's body with it. Art peers ahead and sees two security cameras at the corner of the Chicago Lenders Bank across the street.
Excuse me. FBI. Where's your security office?
Through the door, to the right.
Thank you.
Art strides past the security guard and walks deeper into the Chicago Lenders Bank. He stops at a door marked Security. Art flashes his ID.
Hi. Special Agent Jeffries with the FBI.
Can I help you?
I hope so. Where's the tape for this camera?
Here it is.
Art plays the tape. On the screen, Art walks with Dean, then Dean falls to the ground.
No, look, it's my ass if you take that.
And don't tell anyone. Thank you.
Art takes the tape and leaves the office. Now Art hurries down the street. He pushes open the revolving doors of the cafe. The cafe's nearly empty. Simon and Stacy have gone. Art pushes through the doors and leaves the cafe. He surveys the busy street, looking all around. Across the street, he spots Stacy walking with Simon. He tries to cross the street.
Excuse me, please.
Hey, come on. Gotta go.
Stacy pulls Simon towards Art.
Sorry.
What happened?
Sorry, he almost got away from me. You didn't tell me I have to watch him every second. Sorry, I shouldn't have left the coffee shop.
No!
Simon's in the road.
All right. Don't scream. All right.
Oh, my God.
He doesn't see things like other people do.
Stacy considers this. Art catches something out of the corner of his eye and pulls Simon back behind a lamppost as a Chicago police car drives past.
So where'd you just go? Rob a bank or something?
Art looks at her, then sighs.
Gotta get him out of here. Let's go, Simon. Thank you, Stacy. Thanks for all your help. Come on.
Leo's short-haired girlfriend admires a magic dancer toy on a market stall.
My dad will kill for this. How much? 100.
Get real.
Hey! Have you ever thought, what are we going to collect when we get old? Plaid shirts and Kramer dolls? What's the matter?
Leo leads his girlfriend away from the stall.
Dean's dead. He's been shot.
What?
He wanted to go to Chicago. I said don't go. And he wanted me to go with him and help him.
Someone shot him? Who would shoot him?
I can't tell you.
Leo, I want to help you, but you have to let me in. Tell me what's going on.
You'll find out.
Who? You mean Kudrow?
I don't have the capabilities to email over his head. I can't use the phone because everything gets recorded. Everything is connected to everything, and there is nothing that I can do.
The woman thinks, then she glances away. Her eyes focus on a manual typewriter on one of the stalls. She goes up to the stall, then Leo walks over and joins her.
Low-tech rules.
Leo tries the typewriter. Simon presses a button on a jukebox in a bar. A smiling white-haired woman buzzes Tommy into the bar. Tommy passes Simon at the machine and strolls up to Art, who's sitting in a booth.
Congratulations. As of this morning, you made it to the very top of our own perk board. I don't have to tell you how profoundly pissed Lomax is.
He's keeping a lid on it to cover his ass. But you don't have much time.
Yeah. Did you find out who the shooter is?
Whatever happened to good morning, Tommy?
How are you? Sorry about your car. It got impounded. You won't be able to get it for 2 weeks.
Did you get in trouble?
No, I told him you stole it.
Tommy gives Art some photos of the hitman.
Found him in the Defense Department database. His name is Peter Burrell, Special Forces.
So, let's bring him in.
Can't. Not unless you want to dig him up. He's dead. He's listed as killed in Beirut in 1982.
Art looks at the photo of the hitman and raises his eyebrows.
You still think I'm paranoid?
I don't know, man. Who knows? But if you are, then I guess I'm paranoid, too. We ain't over our heads, man. We can't fuck with the NSA.
So?
We find somebody to talk to about this.
Who? Lomax? He's a company man. NSA could have gotten to him, too.
Fine. I'll go above Lomax.
I don't want you to do anything else. You got a wife and kid to take care of. Go do that. Really.
All right, then what are you going to do?
Art shakes his head.
I don't know.
Why are you doing this, Art? That kid isn't your responsibility.
Whose responsibility is he?
Tommy thinks about this, then presses his lips together.
Look at him. Looks like a regular kid, right? A little circuit gets crossed. Zap. Should have been smart. Go to college, meet a girl, get married, have some kids. Be cool.
Art looks wistfully at Simon.
Are we talking about him, Art, or are we talking about you?
Art's craggy face crinkles with a smile. Art grabs the photos.
Thanks for getting this together for me.
Be careful.
At home, Leo types on white paper, then removes the page from his typewriter. Leo throws away the blue carbon paper. Leo paces over to a filing cabinet and opens the top drawer.
Jesus! Who the fuck are you?
Leo faces the stern-looking hitman.
Oh, please. Please.
Leo slumps to the lounge floor, dead. A blue neon lizard glows on the wall behind Leo's body. The hitman steals over to the filing cabinet. The hitman takes some papers and leaves the house. He removes his black gloves and stalks away. The light is switched on, illuminating a dim hallway. Then Stacy walks out of her bedroom. She peers through a spy hole.
Okay. Oh, you, what do you want? It's 2 o'clock in the morning and you don't know me this well.
Please, I need to talk to you.
Stop it! You're gonna wake up my neighbors.
Art holds Simon in his arms.
We need a place to stay.
How'd you get this address?
I looked it up.
Well, it's not listed.
The name of your company was on the side of your sample case. I called them.
Oh, right. Call my company, ask them for my address, they give it to you. Nope.
Please, Stacy.
Art reaches into his pocket.
An FBI agent.
Yeah, I bought one of those for my little brother, $5. You know, I saw you hiding from the police today. I think I'll just give you.
No, listen. I really am an FBI agent. Please help us.
Hello, Simon.
Hello.
Please.
Move your foot.
Art removes his foot from the door. Stacy opens the door, then Simon gingerly steps inside. Art follows Simon into the lounge.
Thank you very much.
Would it be stupid to ask if you're an FBI agent why you don't just call the FBI for help?
The FBI is looking for me too.
Oh, great. So how does this work? You murder me now or you wait till I'm asleep?
Art looks down at Simon.
Simon just needs to get a little sleep. That's all. He's been up for a long time and you just seem like a nice person, that's all.
Come on, Simon. I'll show you where your bed is.
Simon takes Stacy's hand.
Come on. Are you thirsty? He gets the guest room, you get the couch. There's food in there. Bathroom, you can wash up after yourself.
Stacy takes Simon into a bedroom as Art watches. Simon settles himself onto the bed.
Okay. Let's take these off, all right? One. Two. Okay. That's good.
Stacy covers Simon with a blanket.
You okay? Good night, Simon.
Stacy takes Simon's shoes.
Look. I have to be up in a few hours. Fly to Des Moines in the morning. If I don't make a sale there tomorrow, then I don't pay my rent. So unless there's anything else that you need, I'd like to try to get some sleep now.
No, there's nothing else. Thank you. I promise you we'll be out of here first thing in the morning.
Art frowns as Stacy trudges sleepily past him, then Stacy goes back into her room. Leo Leo's girlfriend, the short-haired woman from the office, cycles down a residential street and stops outside Leo's front door. She pulls her bike in and rests it up against the wall.
Oh, Leo, you won't believe the morning. Did I leave my... Leo?
She walks into the lounge and sees Leo's body on the floor.
Oh, my God.
She covers her mouth with her hand and stares ahead. After a moment, she looks around the room and sees the carbon paper screwed up in the waste bin. Tommy walks through his office.
Tom, there's a woman downstairs asking to see Art Jeffries.
Bring her up.
She won't talk to anyone except Art.
Do me a favor.
I haven't logged it in. Yeah.
Good.
Art is in the cafe sipping a drink. The white-haired woman looks up. Art purses his lips and reaches inside his coat pocket. Unsmiling, Leo's girlfriend enters the cafe with Tommy. Tommy leads her over to where Art is sitting at a table.
How you doing, man?
Anybody else with you?
No.
She glances back at Tommy.
This is Emily Lang. Emily, why don't you have a seat? Go ahead.
Emily blinks nervously and sits down by Art. Then Tommy sits by Emily.
Are you Art Jeffries?
Yeah, I'm Art Jeffries.
Emily reaches into her handbag and retrieves a white envelope filled with blue papers. She passes the envelope across the table to Art.
My boyfriend's last will and testament. I worked with him at NSA.
The other voice on the line.
His name was Leo. He was going to mail one letter to you. The other was addressed to the Senate Oversight Committee. The letters are gone. This is all that's left.
It has come to my attention that my section director and immediate superior, Nicholas Coutreau, was directly involved in the deaths of Martin and Jenny Lynch. Parents of Simon Lynch. And the death of Dean Crandall, my colleague and friend.
And they killed Leo, too. Right after he wrote that letter.
Tommy hands Emily a white handkerchief and she dabs at her nose with the hanky.
Thank you for coming down, Emily. I'm sorry about Leo.
You said you were going to be out of here early before I went to Des Moines this morning, where hopefully I was going to sell enough shoes to make the rent. Only I didn't go to Des Moines, and I didn't make the rent because you had an emergency.
Well, as a matter of fact, it was an emergency,
well, maybe
all right?
You're one of those guys that has constant emergencies. Everything has to be about excitement, everything exciting. There are guys like that, Art.
Yes, I know, there are guys like that, but I don't happen to be one of them, all right? Listen to me. Look at me. This is not about me, all right? It's about that little boy, and he needs some help. As far as I can tell, you are a decent, caring person. I promise you we will be out of your life as soon as possible. Okay? Now look, if for some reason there is an emergency...
Oh, you mean a different emergency.
Yes, a different emergency. Do not call the police, okay? You call this guy, it's with the FBI, he'll be...
Call the FBI, not the police.
Right. The police can't protect Simon.
Right.
Look. Simon is only in danger if they know where he is, okay? They don't know where he is, so he's not in danger, so you're not in danger, all right?
Right. Unless there's an emergency.
Well, it's good to see you keeping your sense of humor about all this.
Yeah.
Look, I promise you I will be back in this apartment at 2:00 tomorrow afternoon, all right? And I don't know how yet, but I will make this up to you, okay? Thank you. Take care.
Simon places the final bit into a jigsaw which has been completed with all the pieces upside down. Later, Tommy pulls up at an airport with Art in the passenger seat.
I don't know if it qualifies as a plan. I'm gonna fly out there and show him a copy of Leo's letter. Here's the bad news. You gotta get Simon into the witness protection program right away.
Art, I'm not even supposed to be talking to you. How do you expect me to authorize a move like that?
Lie, cheat, I don't give a shit. You don't do it, that kid's as good as dead.
Has it ever occurred to you that maybe Kudrow will just shoot you on sight?
Yeah, it has occurred to me. That happens.
You know what to do with these. Hope I see you later.
Art hands the envelope containing the carbon copies to Tommy. A black stretch limo pulls up outside an ivy-covered mansion.
Sandy. So glad you could make it. I heard Ken had back surgery. You have anything to do with that?
Kudrow and Sandy ooze through the crowds of guests mingling at the party as more cars pull up outside the mansion. A security guard scampers over to one of the cars.
Can I help you?
Inside at the party.
Excuse me. Nick, my good friend. I want you to know, sir, that your Mercury thing is a goddamn triumph. I mean that.
I appreciate that, Senator.
Yeah, it's a real feather in your cap. Everyone on the Oversight Committee is singing your praises. You're getting a reputation as the can-do guy.
Thank you very much. I really do appreciate that.
There's a guy outside your cab.
Who?
Says he's with the Bureau. Would you excuse me one moment, please?
The security guard hands Kudrow the envelope.
If it wasn't Bureau, I wouldn't have even bothered you. I just would have lost him, but I didn't know, sir.
No, Teddy, use good judgment. I'd like to see him.
He's not very presentable, sir.
Well, bring him in the back way. Take him to the wine cellar. I'll be down in a couple of minutes.
Kudrow moves through the numerous guests.
Nick, I can't believe you look so good for someone so old. How do you do that?
Drugs, my dear. Massive doses of drugs.
Art looks at some wine.
Please don't handle the wine, Mr. Jeffries.
Kudrow approaches.
Yes, I've read your file. A deeply troubled FBI agent with a lousy record kidnaps a 9-year-old boy. Nice going. Now you come here to my home in the middle of a social function carrying a gun to confront me with this fabricated, unsigned accusation allegedly written by Leo Podransky, who was killed the day before yesterday, by you, for all I know. What do you want from me, Mr. Jeffries? I'd like to get back to my guests.
Unsigned accusation? It's typed on carbon paper. Who uses that anymore? The late Leo Podransky's fingerprints are all over it.
Art opens a bottle and gulps it.
Pomeroy's a little quirky. I'm sure the Senate Oversight Committee won't have any problem at all connecting you to the murder.
But you haven't given the carbon to the Senate Oversight Committee, because if you had, you wouldn't be here right now. You've got your precious carbon tucked away, guaranteeing your personal safety, etc., etc., so you can come here and demand what? Untold millions in unmarked bills? I asked you not to handle the wine, please.
You know, it's good to see you got your priorities in order.
Art drinks from another old bottle.
That's better. You're not worried about murdering a 9-year-old boy, but you're worried about this fucking wine? Here's the deal. I don't give the Senate Oversight Committee the carbon. They don't waste 3 years with their investigation running around wailing and moaning, how could this happen in America? While you have one of your spooks whack Simon Lynch.
Or you do the only thing that'll guarantee Simon Lynch's safety. You or one of your superiors or the President of the United States, I really don't give a fuck who. But someone is going to go on national television and tell America that your billion-dollar uncrackable code has been cracked by a 9-year-old autistic boy. Then you get your carbon back.
Kudrow looks down and watches Art as he picks his gun up from the table.
You know what I think, Mr. Jeffries?
Kudrow pops a cigarette into his mouth.
I think you've seen too many of those four-wheel drive commercials on TV.
Ones where you get to drive fast and be a renegade.
Let's talk about the real world for a moment, shall we? Where you're not some wonderful lone wolf hero, but you're part of a team and you play your position, because that's what America is, Mr. Jeffries. It's one big team. Now, this might be difficult for you to grasp, but I am a patriot. And a patriot is one who makes the right moral choice. Sometimes it takes a strong man to make that choice. One boy who cannot survive on his own, one of nature's mistakes, weighed against the lives of thousands of our people. Think about it. You worked undercover. How many of our agents will be put in harm's way if this code is compromised? Members of your team. Men like Rashid Halabi, an Iraqi American and a great patriot. A man who, as we speak, is undercover in Saddam's Republican Guard. A man who has not seen his family.
Art kicks Kudrow in the chest.
That's for Simon's parents, you piece of shit. You got 36 hours. Should be enough time to get your undercover people out of harm's way.
Art strides over to a rack of bottles.
Oh, by the way, Happy birthday, Nick.
Art has pushed over a rack.
Hello?
Hey, it's me.
Yeah, you all right?
Yeah, I'm all right.
How'd it go with the witness protection thing?
Everything's set. Tomorrow night, 8:15, the U.S. Marshals are going to meet us with a chopper at the heliport on top of the GEX building. I took your advice, I lied.
All right, good. See you then. Bye.
Goodrow has been listening.
That was recorded on passive VOX at Agent Jordan's residence last night, sir, at 11:58 p.m.
As to the pickup, sir, since we can assume the boy will not be alone, I suggest we wait until we get him on the chopper.
Goodrow nods.
I saw them do this in the movie.
At Stacy's, Simon stares intently at the TV. Stacy's taking a shower upstairs.
Simon, turn it down, please. Hello.
Maybe I am crazy.
Hello.
Maybe I'd better see a psychiatrist.
Hello.
Go see a doctor.
Stacy looks at the phone, then at the clock. It's 2:22. A yellow cab pulls up at the curb.
How much I owe you?
$20, sir.
Thanks a lot.
Art enters Stacy's house.
Stacy?
Art paces the kitchen, then reaches for his gun.
Stacy?
With his gun at the ready, Art marches through the ivory-painted corridor, then frowns. He runs to get the telephone. Tommy picks up his phone.
Hello?
Tommy? Where are they now?
Relax, Art. Simon and the girl are fine. I talked to him a couple hours ago. She said she got spooked, someone called, and when she picked up the phone, the line was dead.
Yeah, it was me. It was calling from the airplane.
You told him when and where witness protection's gonna pick him up?
Absolutely. She's gonna meet us there. Everything's set. Listen, I gotta go.
Agent Jordan. Lieutenant Colonel Kudrow, the NSA.
Now, what am I looking at here, Tommy?
You forged documents to the U.S. Attorney's Office to obtain witness protection under false pretenses.
Chief, don't listen to anything this guy tells you.
Tommy?
This guy is dangerous.
Tommy,
this guy's the...
Sit down and don't speak.
Tommy inhales, then sits down opposite the chief. Kudrow perches on the desk.
Agent Jordan, regardless of what you think of me, I only want to resolve the situation to rescue a young boy from a delusional kidnapper. We will proceed with the pickup as planned. And as of this moment, the FBI will stand down and the NSA will take over from here.
Tommy stares. Kudrow stands and walks out of the chief's office.
Chief, take a look at this.
No, I'm not taking a look.
No, you have to look at this. Leo Podransky worked for Kudrow. He wrote that letter and he was also killed after he wrote it. I just ran it through the lab and the fingerprints on it are an exact match for his.
The chief peruses the carbon copy letter. Stacy and Simon stand near three flying flags. Simon points upwards.
That's where we're going, Simon.
Stacy and Simon look up at the skyscraper.
Come on.
Simon takes Stacy's outstretched hand and they step away. People in business suits step out of the lift. Stacy goes into the lift and Simon walks in awkwardly by her side. The lift doors open to reveal a stark, shadowy space. They step out. Stacy peers towards an approaching man.
Is that you, Art?
Kudrow stalks through the shadows, passing a ladder.
I'm a United States Marshal with the Witness Protection Program. What do you do?
Good.
Stacy watches Kudrow. He bends down to greet Simon.
You must be Simon.
Chopper on approach, sir.
Kudrow smiles at Simon.
Why don't you come with me, son?
He doesn't like to be touched by strangers. I'll take him.
Stacy looks down.
Come on, Simon. Let's go see the helicopter.
They walk towards a door.
That Art was supposed to meet us here.
An been a change in plans, but I want to assure you that your country owes you the greatest debt of gratitude.
Chopper coming in! Don't have much time!
The hitman opens a door to a roof area.
For the safety of the boy, you should go home now and forget that you were ever here.
Windswept, Stacy looks down at Simon.
Hey, Simon, you're gonna go for a ride in the helicopter. Bye, Simon.
The hitman steps aside.
You can go again.
Simon moves ahead, pointing towards the helicopter. The chopper approaches the top of the office block with the letters GEX lit up on the helipad. In a control room, the chief observes security camera footage. He sees Simon and Kudrow.
Tommy?
They're on the helipad. The chopper's coming in.
You have a green light. Go, 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 go!
Let's go, let's move. Go, 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 go!
The team forge ahead towards Kudrow and the hitman.
Hold him back!
The hitman sprints through the door and fires at the team. Stacy ducks down. Tommy yanks Stacy to shelter across the corridor. The pilot lowers the helicopter. Below, Kudrow grabs Simon. Stacy covers her ears. Outside, Kudrow runs round to the door of the chopper. Simon struggles in his arms. Kudrow shoves Simon inside, then spots Art in the chopper. Kudrow hangs onto Art's foot. Kudrow drops out of the helicopter. Then Art falls, holding Simon in his arms. Now Simon stands and runs away. The hitman fires at the team. The helicopter is hovering in the air as Simon runs towards the edge of the roof. Kudrow aims his gun at the boy.
Oh, no!
Art has lunged for Kudrow, causing Kudrow to drop his gun on the roof. Art wrestles with him. Then Art takes the gun from his pocket, but Kudrow grabs it too. Kudrow bangs Art's hand, and Art drops his gun off the roof. Kudrow squeezes Art's windpipe as Art struggles and yanks Kudrow's tie.
No! No! No, Simon, no!
Simon walks along the edge of the roof. He picks up Kudrow's gun. Simon stands on the edge of the roof with the gun in his hand. He turns and trudges precariously along the roof, his t-shirt and hair flapping in the wind. Art struggles underneath Kudrow as they fight on the roof. Art reaches for the gun, and Simon hands it to him. Art aims the gun at Kudrow and gets to his feet. Art points the gun at Kudrow as Tommy and the team fire shots at the glass wall by the hitman. The windows crack. The draft from the flying chopper causes the windows to shatter. The hitman runs past the windows and is covered by flying splinters of glass. Bloodied, he falls onto the roof. He falls lifelessly onto the bed of broken glass.
Tommy, no! Hold him back! Hold the fire! Keep him back! No!
Kudrow grabs Simon as Art fires at Kudrow. Kudrow steps back, and Art snatches Simon from Kudrow's grasp. Teetering on the edge of the roof, Kudrow clutches his chest and looks up at Art. Art looks back with furrowed brow. Kudrow pulls back his jacket, revealing the bleeding patch on his shirt. Kudrow loses his balance and slips backwards off the roof. He falls down towards a lower glass roof. Art watches as Kudrow plunges through the glass ceiling. Then Art turns back to the FBI team and walks across the roof towards them.
Where's the team leader?
Right here, Agent Jeff Race.
It's Kudrow's piece. I got a 9mm down on the sidewalk.
Figure it out, take care of it.
Art hands Kudrow's gun to the team leader. Smiling, Art strolls towards Tommy, Stacy, and Simon. Art swallows deeply as he looks ahead. On a sunny day, a blue car is parked outside the Chicago Neuropsychiatric Learning Center. A couple come down the steps from the front door. Looking out of the open car window, Stacy watches the couple pass by, then smiles as she looks patiently back towards the Institute. Inside, Art walks with a carrier bag in his hand.
Okay. Let's see what you got.
Bug.
Bug.
Can you look at me? Mm-hmm. Bug.
Bug.
Looking into a classroom, Art spots Simon drawing with another boy. A teacher approaches.
Can I help you?
I'm Art Jeffries, a friend of Simon Lynch.
Yes, I know. His foster parents told me all about you.
How's he doing?
He's fine. He's adjusted very well.
The teacher smiles.
Do you want to say hello?
He probably wouldn't remember me. I was told not to expect too much. I brought him some puzzles. He likes puzzles. Do you think you could give these to him, please?
Sure, but I think it would be better for Simon if you did. It's okay. Come on.
Art walks into the classroom and reaches inside his white carrier bag. He takes out some puzzle books and walks towards Simon's desk. He sits down by the boy.
Hey, Simon. How you doing, partner? I brought you some new puzzles. Why do you like those?
Simon takes the puzzle books and studies them. Art frowns.
Hey, Simon, look at me.
Simon looks over Art's head.
Look at me, Simon. Look at my eyes. Look in my eyes.
Simon's gaze slides until his eyes focus on Art's face.
It's me, Art.
Simon scrutinizes Art's face, then inhales and stands up by his chair. He steps forward and gently puts his arms around Art. Art's eyes sparkle as he holds Simon tightly in his arms. Art pats Simon on the back. ITFC audio description.